Good evening. Thank you all for coming on a miserable London night, strikes and rain. We appreciate you being here. I know it's more of an effort than usual. By the 9th century, Baghdad had 36 libraries. But the main one of these wasn't called a library, it was called a house of wisdom. And it was a place associated with all knowledge. It was a place of astrologers, scholars, architects. It's the place where they translated texts, Greek texts, Roman texts. In the Dark Ages, we were in the Dark Ages here. In Baghdad, they had this extraordinary library. In 1258, at exactly this time of year, I believe, it was sacked by the Mongols and burnt down. It never really recovered until the 20th century. There was another, I'm sure we're going to get a better version of this from Rashid, but another library was built in 1920 with the help extraordinarily of Gertrude Bell, the English adventurer. And that one was sacked in 2003 as a result of the war. So the history of the library in Baghdad has been very up and down, about as up and down as you can get. And I hope that now we're on an up, inshallah. This is why we're here today, if you forgive me using that expression. So we're here to celebrate this new phase and to get explained to us this new phase in the library. And we have here Amir Moussaoui from AMBS Architects and Marcos de Andres, an old friend of mine also from the architects, and Rashid Salim, who I hope is going to give us a more cultural and broader historical context. Oh, excuse me. I'm so sorry. We will talk, then we will discuss, and then we will all discuss is the format. And we have maybe 40 minutes talking, half an hour discussing in the room, if that's okay. And if I could hand over to Amir. Yep. To give us a little introduction to exactly what this new Baghdad library is all about.
Well, I'm going to introduce, first of all, our company, AMBS.
Right.
So AMBS was founded originally by my father, who's an Iraqi architect, born, brought up, and educated in Baghdad. And he set up his practice around 40 years ago. And during that time, he's delivered a number of very prestigious projects in the country, in and around Baghdad and the country itself. So the picture on the left is one of those. It's Haifa Art Center on Haifa Street in Baghdad. And another one on the right is Al Hamra Apartments. And he's also notorious for building hundreds of private houses. The Haifa Street development, again on the right there, is something that a project that he did in collaboration with his brother, another renowned Iraqi architect, Sami Moussaoui. And during that time, while he was working in Iraq, he built up a repertoire of delivering very sophisticated projects. And he's collaborated with some of the internationally renowned architects such as Robert Venturi. This is one of the compositions they did together for the State Mosque in Baghdad. Also, he was involved in a number of infrastructure projects, one in particular, Baghdad Metro, which unfortunately never came to realization. And during that period, he gained sort of respect for his ability to deliver not just the quality and traditional architecture, but his own interpretation of a modern typology for buildings in Iraq, and was very focused and known for his attention to detail. So these are some photos of some of the houses that he's completed in that time. And in 2003, he returned to Baghdad to reopen his office after being in London for a number of years. He had moved here to ensure that we, my family, my mother, my brother and sister, were all brought up in a country and had the the opportunities that we potentially wouldn't have had had we grown up in Iraq, in a war-torn environment. And in 2003, when the office was reopened, unfortunately due to the security situation just after the occupation, he moved to the north of Iraq, to Erbil, and he again was working, doing a lot of hospitals, a lot of project management and architecture out there. He's done a lot of very interesting projects out there. And in 2007, he was joined by myself and Marcos. We had set up together an office here in London, and together we worked on a number of competitions. This is one of the competitions that we first did together, actually again done with his brother, Sami. And this is for the Kadmia Master Plan, which is a very, very different context and site to the where the library is. It's a very delicate, sensitive area, and our approach to it has been very, very different to that in that we have for the library, which is a much more modern building, as you can see. This project here is actually was exhibited around 2 years ago in summertime in the mosaic rooms here, part of the home exhibition. It represents, or is an example even, of our commitment to sustainability. It was a project about affordable housing, and our approach was to look at the traditional techniques that they'd used for many, many years. And what we did was propose compressed earth blocks, so using traditional earth, which is something that they've used for centuries in Iraq, with a modern version of Baad Gir, which is a traditional passive cooling system, to bring a very easy-to-build house, which is literally built out of the ground. So our commitment to sustainability is something that's come through to our project in Baghdad Library. In 2009, we were asked to supervise and project manage the Basra Sports City. And this is a project that wasn't designed by us. It was designed by an American company, but it just shows a very high level. It's a FIFA-approved stadium, so that Iraq is ready for these types of projects. And as you can see, this was one of the matches that was played, almost full attendance. So the people actually do want to see these new buildings come to life. These are some nostalgic photos of Iraq in its golden era, and it shows us the layers of history that Baghdad has. It's not just this orientalist vision of 1001 nights. It's actually got many modern layers to it as well. And up until the first Gulf War, there was a lot of modern construction happening at the time. So our perception of it might be slightly different nowadays, but actually there are a lot of modern buildings there. And this is a photograph from Google of where the site is. It's located centrally to the east of the river, and it's adjacent to El Shahid Monument and the El Shahid Lake and Shara Palestine. The Palestine Street runs adjacent to it. That's a close-up of it. So the red spot indicates where our library will go, and it's actually surrounded by a lake which was man-made. It connects to this other lake, the Shaheed one, which in turn connects to an army canal and then connects to the river. We're not actually building in the water. We're building on that small island, which you can faintly see underneath the spot, which is solid ground there. So this is a picture of the Shaheed Monument, and then that's the site, the plot of land that we're going to be building on. So it connects to to the main street as well. That is a close-up of the Shaheed Monument. You can see how large and big this project is. Puts things into scale. And this is a Corbusier gymnasium that was designed by Corbusier in the 50s and built posthumously in the 1980s. And it's on our site, the same site that we're putting the library, has got this modern building, and adjacent to it there's a football stadium, 45,000 seat football stadium, and another swimming pool, which was part of a master plan that Corbusier was developing for the Olympics. So I just bring that up because there are modern buildings in the area. Other buildings on the site, existing site, are warehouses and bungalows, which don't have any real sort of architectural significance. So this is a master plan that we have since been appointed to do after another competition. It's at the early stages of the design, so I don't really want to talk too much about it. Eventually we'll probably have another talk about this. I will just mention that we are focused, and actually what the brief was that we've developed with the client, who's the Ministry of Youth and Sport, is that we want to develop an autonomous site that we're calling it the Youth City, and it's aimed at being autonomous and completely self-sufficient and as environmentally efficient as possible. We have used as much possible technology that we know of today to reduce the energy consumption and actively replace the energy, and we've expanded, as you can see, the lake that is existing, and we are paying careful attention to the ecological impact of our building and the buildings that are going to be proposed around that site to ensure that that lake remains a sort of key source, a bringer of life, if you like, to the site. So, again, that idea that we're pushing about sustainability, in an oil-rich country like Iraq, what does that really mean? The people, you know, here in the West, we understand when we appreciate, intelligent design, because over the years it's become something that the rest of the population demands, if you like, from its architects. But in an oil-rich country like Iraq, there's very different parameters driving the design. So, we've made a very conscious decision about communicating that message in the design of the roof, which is covered in solar panels. And it's part of, again, we have a very interesting strategy for reducing the energy consumption of the building, which Marcus can maybe talk about a bit later. And do you want to jump in now? This is about Alexandria Library, which has parallels to the Baghdad Library historically, and I'll let Marcus continue.
Okay, so can I go back? After all this, of course, now you are all wondering, how do you guys get to this? Because, we've received a lot of comments, and many of them were asking if this is a spaceship or the aliens are here, or even worse, if there is yet another person that wants to, an architect that wants to be like Zaha did. And this is not the case. And for that, we're going to explain a little bit how with the journey of us, getting to this. As Amir said, the tone was set on the site, as we didn't have any traditional, nothing that was very sensitive architecturally, so we could really go and let our creativity flow. So before I start about the library, I would say the design design approach that that me and Amir and Ali like systematically use every time that we have to face a new project is we sit down around the table and we discuss, we talk, we think, we really ask each other, we push each other, like, what is the best that we can do? Ideas. That's what it is. It's not about, like, the pencil comes later. The sketches come later. At the beginning, it's just about thoughts. And little by little, like, establish, like, a set of aspirations and give shape to an ideal and kind of, like, deduce a little bit, like, what we want to achieve. So the library, like, started a little bit like that. Of course, we did look at other buildings that, of course, we were, like, very intrigued by. Alexandra Library is one of them. It's a beautiful building, and it's got this, which is amazing. It's an open plan, a beautiful reading room. So we started thinking about something like this. I mean, we want to do something, if we can, maybe we can better it. Like, we started thinking, like, maybe we don't need columns. Maybe we can think about out of the box. Maybe we can do something that is more. Other people will use it for like for arenas or for sport venues. So maybe we can create a space that doesn't have these columns where people can see each other. People can understand the space. There will be connectivity. There will be more. There will be more, almost understanding of the whole space at a glance. That's what we wanted to do. So we started with those ideas, and then as you can see, we started carving the inside of the building. So the floor plates cascade onto each other, and we create this valley, so where everybody can see and can connect in anticipation. And this is. Of course, as far as it goes in terms of of creating a set of spaces that work, there was another level that runs parallel, which is like cultural significance, which we were not going to fall into easy pastiche or traditional. I mean, that we wanted to do it in a different way. And that's how we started, like, thinking about encrypting a message on the roof. How we started, like, looking at the how can we actually achieve these ideas that we have about such a space. There's more of this, and then you can see now on the roof, like, it reads Ikra. I don't know, apologies my pronunciation, which means reed. It's the first word that God told to the prophet. We didn't do it like, it's not a, I mean, you can say that there is a religious connotation or not. It's beautiful, it's very poetic, like the very light that is flooding the space. Is through the word read. Continuing on this, well, there's a bit more ideas. You can see, you can read that. You can see the word. These are like early sketchy models of how we like, were creating this valley, like playing with the creating like the perfect pitch, so like people can actually see each other, understand the spaces. And here is where we start playing with the encrypting the message, how we can maybe pixelate the word. Maybe we can play with light. How are we going to do this? But then eventually we realized that we could do it with Kufic Arabic, and we asked a professional calligrapher to help us to do this, and this was the result, which we think is really good. And there you go. I don't need to be this close. Okay. Shall I do the whole thing again? Anyway, okay, so this is as far as it goes, as like design approach and how the library came about. There are many more things. Of course, the lake is a big part of the site. So like the building already, like if you see that you need a big space with no columns, with a big span, already was addressing the lake, and then we needed an entrance. So already, like the building started to be more elongated, and this is how the process of like creating such a thing started. It's not another attempt to create like some sort of icon, a beautiful form that then is filled with program just for the sake of it. There was a lot of thought into this, and we hope that people. Well, no. We know that people, when we are in that, when they experience it, they will feel the same way. And now, Rashad is going to say a few words about like the libraries.
A few words. It's already 5 minutes. I was giving
for such a subject. Voilà. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وكل أسماء وهو الحسنى. In the name of Allah and its 99 named and written attributes, the key words we have been given to know something of His creation, for He is unknowable. And we have over here Maysalun Faraj, who is a colleague, a friend, and a fellow artist, who really sort of taught me something of this concept of Asma Allah Husna. And it is in large part due to her that I'm over here speaking and have been invited. So, assalamu alaikum. And thank you all for this invitation and opportunity to share some thoughts on the library. I was only given 5 minutes, and the library is a huge thing, you know. And to the Qatlan Foundation, whose tenacious applied vision in providing the welcome space and context of... let's get down. Yep. Also, the book-related events helps to frame this, so thank you very much. Few countries can be said to be as encyclopedically documented. I was given 5 minutes, you know, so I've been working until just now. I haven't even changed my clothes. Yeah? And that has to do a lot with Aya.
Yeah?
Yes, okay, so few countries can be said to be as encyclopedically documented in all possible medium, format, and type of book as Iraq, or B, and also B, the heart of a historic diaspora as expansive, knowledgeable, and well-storied. Iraq, with a portfolio of libraries and all manner of home and office worldwide, has a prime seat as one nexus amongst a select few on the round table of world faith, knowledge, politics, and imagination. Facilitating and engaging the dialogue of this local and global mind by way of our senses, sight, touch, and sound, and immediate, and conveying all the other senses, is the extraordinary expression, creativity, and knowing that marks our species. This mandates the building, influence, and objectives of our library. Our library can be seen to be an ark of the recorded experience of collective humanity, an ark metaphorically speaking, and apparently also visually. I see that as an ark in the MBA's design, but also in a very practical sense and in practice to weather the storm we have and still experience in Iraq. The flood of wars and conflicts, massive social, medical, and environmental ramifications, and to put the cherry on top, the climatic cataclysm now prophesied by the most knowledgeable of our day and age. The real and tangible opening of the doors of this library in Iraq, undoubtedly, is the wish of any and all Iraqis. It is as well of interest and in the interest of the global community, having been riveted to the legacy of Iraq and entwined in our destiny. In the clear play of contrast characteristic of Iraq, I see the iridescent light and solid shadow as having what, to my mind, given a natural birth to the indented word. Uh, before I was shown the other cylinder seal stuff. Anyway, so but there, during the spaces, as you mentioned, you know, Iraq has been repeatedly denied access, time and again, to her own library. However, the latest attempt at denial and closing of doors differs fundamentally from all those that preceded, in that the sum of our knowledge, art and thought, has never been so extensive, in as many forms and media, and as safe as in this age that Iraqis truly helped make. Bringing this back to a welcome home and a welcoming people, hungry to break an enforced fast, is another influential objective of this library. You must keep in mind that this library is also for those who cannot read and write. And the library is not just an urban project. Regaining the literacy and education lost to two generations and refinding our own literacy in the many forms of culture we have lost touch with from our own heritage, I hope will guide the design of programs, events, and active engagement with the public of this library. You know, this is the very first time I've ever written anything. I normally accept for it. So, you understand? Excuse me. Iraq in real time and place, the natural land, flora, and fauna, and people, can be read like a book. One need but engage. It is, Iraq, a book written in the inimitable wonder of creation, nature, and the firmaments are repeatedly referred to in the Holy Quran as the first original and paramount Quran, the singularity of Allah, the living word of the one God. The reverenced owed to the blessing that is the written books cannot overshadow the first, and we must look and read carefully and make allowance for the means to see and carefully regard these verses that include the site our library is to be built on. Every talk and presentation I give concerning Iraq is an opportunity to advocate that we look at a map of Iraq. The why and where and how we are and achieved, and what we have achieved is there for the reading, narrated by the rivers of Mesopotamia, the mountains that gave birth to these sacred rivers, and the alluvial plain and marshes that are its children. Looking at the AMBS library design, we see, as Marco pointed out, in Kufic script, composed of photovoltaic cells, solar panels, the word Iqra, read. First order towards enlightenment, and the Prophet, may peace be upon him, did read, and we are blessed to read what he read. Amongst which is that to seek knowledge wherever it may be is a fundamental Islamic pleasure. A homage to creation and a duty. That knowledge and also the technology born of knowledge may be most recent, futurist even, but our library will be concerned just as well with that of the past and even the forgotten. Or, as a relevant example, cylinder seals are literally miniature book presses whose embossed clay pages, many of them lost, stolen from the ground without documentation, looted and prostituted for war to trade, have not yet been read or fully comprehended. Our library is being planned and must be constructed and operational, whatever the security state of play. If it takes reminding 1,000 times to those who fuel and stock the present language of hate, hubris, and exceptionalism, we must do so and 1,000 times over through our library too, that nowhere does Allah order judgment by a gang of isolation, of individual or community in isolation, of individual or community nature, or abstracted from the full context of his revealed book. Only God is the final judge, the all-knowing, the compassionate. The terrorist destruction of lives, property, and culture has nothing to do with Islam or any other people of the book. And throughout the Tigris Flotilla, I've just had been on a trip down the rivers of Iraq, And during a time in 2013, when atrocities were spiking to 206 and 7 levels, as they continue to do, I think January had 700 people. No single person during that trip, not a single person that I met, Yanni, that actually were living in the country, said other than that this was political. They all seemed to read, if not from the same page, then most certainly the same book. I wish we already have, but now as our library is being planned, it's not too late to call upon the deductive powers of Sherlock Holmesian library. And with the aid of trusted Dr. Watson's forensic library in Scotland Yard, study, identify, and isolate the cane-marked perpetrators of a two-decade-long crime wave of serial destruction and looting of libraries. Archives and museums under the guise and the fog of war. I think our libraries must have an office linked to a coordinated constellation of investigative operation rooms, and be also both a memorial to this Holocaust, a word that means the burning destruction, and a fortress grounded in the security of intelligence to fight the battle once and for good against the preservation from this crime and to heal the evil it has wrought. Finally, I have the privilege of having been offered the job of a sort of cultural program designer and advisor to Nature Iraq. My recent participation in the Tigris River flotilla, where I had the opportunity to read the land, censor water, and experience an always civil and deeply alive people, neighbors from north to south, has given me more than any book I've ever held in my hands. The vision I read has motivated me to dream, aspire towards, and work towards establishing, and this is my first public announcement, of an institute of contemporary and ancient design to be called the Jawad Salim Institute of Contemporary and Ancient Design. I hope that my work with Nature Iraq will grant me the broadest access to engage with, learn from, and help to gather and create alongside so many others for a return to the normalcy we take for granted here in the UK. It is decidedly interesting and very weird times. To end, it must be noted that both Nature Iraq and the Institute can really not be, or do, without a library. And what a library. A library of libraries, perhaps even, you know, the library of libraries. Yalani. Let's build this library. Hanil Waqet wa Zaman Ati. Yeah. Okay. Excuse my emotions. Books always do that to me.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Rashad. Thank you so much. I would like to expand a little on, or I'd like you to expand, all three, on something you said, which is this library is a kind of symbol, or needs to be a kind of symbol of national unity, and it needs to be for people who are illiterate, who've suffered from the last two generations, you said, of the lack of education, lack of access to knowledge. At the same time, we're in a very, you know, you call it, we're in weird times, but we're in weird times for the library as well, because something that's been familiar and relatively constant for 2,500, 3,000 years suddenly has a very different role now. A library is something very different to what it was 20 years ago. I mentioned that there was this House of Wisdom, which I know an awful lot about, but it's a wonderful idea, a House of Wisdom in the 9th century. What is the contemporary library? So there's two questions here. What is the contemporary library? What is it meant to do? And what is the contemporary library in Baghdad? What does it need to do for Iraq? That's all. That's you have a minute.
Well, I mean, I know what a library shouldn't be, which is a storage space for books. And I think that's what libraries have kind of become in a way. You know, they're no longer, or at least they shouldn't, and our intent is not to create a quiet space where everybody's hushed up and they go to just, you know, read in solitude. I think libraries have had to evolve to become social and educational and cultural spaces. You know, from the beginning when we were designing it, we knew, you know, that's why the building sort of cascades down to a valley, that the space in the middle would be an event space. And, you know, hopefully in parallel to the operational program will be the cultural program that will hopefully be an independent body. So the library will become its own autonomous body, not yep. related to any sort of political ideologies or parties or whatever. So for us, you know, we responded to that in the design. And the interfaces that we have for people to actually engage and get access to that information, as you know, most of the information nowadays is available in digital format. So you don't, you know, not many people are sort of going and reading books anymore to get information. Although even in Iraq, you know, they have problems with the internet. It's not that easy. It's not as readily available as it is over here. And we've aimed, our ambition is not to sort of set, you know, just a basic benchmark for Iraq, but, you know, this library needs to be contemporary internationally. It needs to set a benchmark in the world, if you like. So the interfaces that we have, the way people engage and educate themselves has evolved, and we've allowed for that, it facilitates that. I mean, it's a very modern approach for libraries. It's definitely not going to be quiet.
The electronics and the digital is just one means of conveying that knowledge. I believe that all the means have to be used in every single form. Like I said, even ancient ones that we've forgotten how to use. So, I mean, the Iraqi library should be, I believe, the sum mm-hmm. of knowledge given. But also, it's a matter of seeing more and more who we are and where we are. So cartography is part of that mapping. That is part of a library. And I'm struck always by the fact that, like in England, you find that the museum is a library mm-hmm. and has a library. Mm-hmm. Yeah? The museum and all these are things that you read. You have to stop looking at these books as objects. You read them and allow for the reading and allow for the design according to what we're reading. So the access to all of these global libraries is an essential part of this Iraq library. Mm-hmm. We need the information to enter. We need to exemplify. I mean, I'm over here as a guest in no official capacity with AMBS. And I do not see AMBS's plan as necessarily the library. This is one tender mm-hmm. towards this library. This library is much bigger than anything. But it has to be done. And AMBS have a lot of things going for them that makes them good candidates. But still, personally, there are things that I would like to see that I've not seen in this.
So you think that the library is a bigger construct? It's a kind of national, international, a global construct, and needs to be interconnected to knowledge.
It's a holistic construct, mm-hmm. rather than looking at in the political terms of international, etc. Mm-hmm. It's holistic. Mm-hmm. Iraq is not just Iraq. Iraq is an international presence.
Yeah.
You know, in religions, etc. Like I mentioned. Yeah. But also the world has to be holistically present in that library, and also where it is, which includes that body of water that was mentioned.
Yeah.
For me, that body of water is very important. I've swum in that body of water. I've boated in that body of water. I know that body of water before it was split up, things built up on it, causeways going through it, and slowly, slowly, like cuts, the whole thing being cut up. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about its origin. here mentioned it as being man-made. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd like to find out. But whatever it is the only wetland in Baghdad.
Right.
It is the only wetland in all of Baghdad. It's already being chopped.
Mm-hmm. Was it there since, like, the 70s?
Oh, much earlier. Much earlier.
Was it? You've been there?
Yeah, yeah. It was built before the monument. You had the Luna Park.
Yes.
Baghdad. It was built closer there. My friend at the time was with the Arabs.
Yes, yes.
Who owned the Luna Park.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had sort of free access, you know, the whole time, you know, to that place. But amongst that was going to this lake and boating on it, swimming in it. It was like mangrove forests, you know? Marshlands, birds, etc., so forth.
And the Luna Park was a fairground, yeah?
Yes, it was a fairground. It was the only construct there.
Yeah.
Because it's wet land.
Mm-hmm.
And the land, Iraq is and Baghdad is prone to flooding.
Yeah.
It's part of the system of movement of water.
Mm-hmm.
And also, right through that area of Iraq, the water table is very close. At that point, the water table comes up.
So there is actually quite an interesting history to the topology there. There's the marshlands, there's the funfair, there's the youth, the Corbusier building, the gymnasium, the kind of history of sports. It's unusual, isn't it? You expect the library to be in a kind of an academic context, but actually here it's in a kind of leisure complex. Maybe that's a good association.
Let me just say, going back to the what a library is or it's not, like the word library, it doesn't really. I mean, I guess that at the time when they called it the House of Wisdom, it's because library at the time maybe wasn't really defining what this thing was. I don't know if the library would be a hub. I mean, I don't know if the hub is actually a hub of wisdom. I don't know. But like, we hope that it's much more, and even we don't even know what it's going to be. Especially, I mean, the things that the movements that this building can trigger by just being there, creating this interaction between people, is just unforeseen. I mean, nobody knows. So, that note.
And
as the you're saying, like the leisure and youth, there is a connotation there that is that gives us a bit extra. I mean, this master plan is by Ministry of Youth and Sport. So, youth is a very part of them. They want to get the youth to
it's
do things.
It's one of the better ministries.
Right.
It's the youth and sport. Because it has youth.
Yeah.
Because youth are involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, the Haifa, the art center that your father built and designed is now the Ministry of Culture.
Right.
And there's no art center there.
Right.
It has been eaten up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So it's now just in the same way as all the natural waters, etc. Yeah.
Yeah.
The a lot of people asked us, like, how is Iraq? I mean, many people here probably know because they're from there, but many other people don't know. I mean, when we go there, we tell them, like, really, if you see, like, just normal people that want to be playing football.
Yeah.
And that's what they want to do, because I mean, they want normality. They want, like, this life to carry on, and they just forget about all this.
As Rashad said, it's politics, you know.
Yeah.
When I was living there when I was 10, just between wars, you know, no one knew, no one had a sense of identity that was defined by their religion or anything.
Yeah.
It was we are collectively the people of Iraq, and there was this very neighbourly sort of, much more so than maybe other urban environments that we've been in, like running around as kids, feeling a sense of welcome and sort of love in the area as well.
But it's also known, there's a proverb, I'm sure somebody of you knows it better than me, that books are written in Cairo, published in Lebanon and read in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Iraqis are proactive, determined readers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to read because not they want to put a book in front of their face and hide. But you know, Iraqis have that knowledge, want that, and that is from anybody. I mean, one of the sites in Iraq that was typical was every lamp post had a young person underneath it reading.
Mm.
And I'm talking during the time when you had the problems with.
Yeah. And the corollary to that, you bring politics up, but is there the political will at the moment to build a major building like this?
Yes, that's why they've, you know, they announced this competition and invited us to it. I mean, they're very adamant that they want this thing to happen. And we're at the moment finalising the bill of quantities so that we can go to tender, because they're desperate to get this thing out there because it's so important. You know, it's so needed for Iran.
Yeah, it's obviously that there's always a problem when they're fighting against basic infrastructure. You know, the country is smashed to pieces, isn't it? So there's always, I can imagine there will always be a tussle. You know, how do we allocate millions for this project when this quarter hasn't got street lighting, this quarter hasn't got sewage, so on? But do you think there's enough gravity behind the project?
I think projects like this, educational projects, yeah, are maybe the only way we're going to get out of this, the sort of problems that we're in. We have to provide these sorts of facilities. The library is maybe the only real public building left, you know, where there isn't a sort of commercial agenda or you're trying to sell something.
There is no problem with money.
Right.
It's not an issue, money.
Really?
You're actually swimming in money. Right. Yeah? It's shitting money. Yeah? Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah? It's managing that money, using that money,
yeah,
and the corruption, the siphoning that money. Yeah. There's no problem with money.
Right. And I have one final question, which is a more formal architectural question, which is, you've explained the calligraphy, but how about the shape of the building, the plan form of the building? Where does that come from?
Cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
Well, originally we hadn't been commissioned to do the master plan, so we didn't know exactly where it was going to be, but we knew we wanted to be on the lake. And we knew that the main sort of focal point, main body of the building was going to be sat on the lake. Mm-hmm. So there is this sort of marine-like aesthetic to it, if you like, the arc. And at that time, we weren't sure how to deal with the security situation and how to sort of focus the entry point. So that's why it sort of tailed off to one entry point at the end. So that was the original sort of formation, and then eventually playing with the roof and the word Iqra and fitting it in.
Mm-hmm.
It was an evolution, but it came from a number of different drives. We didn't sort of sketch something out and say that looks great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not how we design as a practice. It's sort of an iterative, intuitive process.
Well, we have more time. If I can answer, we can open the... Do you want to say something?
2 points.
Of course, by all means.
From what they were speaking, I mean, one thing that came to mind that really is the idea of modernity is a very modern building.
Yeah.
It's extremely modern building. And I've got... I really think that we need to step back and stop separating the modern from the tradition.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every tradition has been a modernity at some point. And any tradition become modern again, and most modernities are very dated very quickly, and that's something I'd like to point out. The second thing is space. I was looking at the Calvomia design, and I was thinking, oh, look at all those palm trees. There were people when I put my glasses on. But what is this? What is it about this need to create an open space, which is a hallmark of authoritarian
dictatorships?
Yeah. The whole point is in Iraq, especially in open space. Have you been in open spaces in Iraq? You haven't? You've been air conditioned? Yeah. If you're in open space, and especially a reflective open space, you fry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You fry.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're in open. The first thing you're looking for is some shade. Yeah. So what is this with the open space business? Yeah. Instead of you can create enough passageway, shade, etc. If you had that whole Calvomia thing surrounded in palm trees, and feed half the population as well. Yeah. So what is this with this open space business?
Well, actually, the interior of the library is, you know, the cascading terraces is pretty much like an outside space inside. Mm-hmm. So there is something that's important that we wanted to create in the library that sort of picks up on what you're talking about. But you're right, the open spaces outside in the environment of Iraq is probably not going to be filled with people. Kazmir in particular is a bit different because there's a pilgrimage there every year, and over 2 million people come to the site within a space of 2 weeks.
But then they put a canopy up or something.
No, there's an area adjacent that they do have canopies, and that particular design, one of the requirements in the brief was to have a 100,000 square meters of open space around, so that people could come for the pilgrimage and not be, squished in between buildings. But the building itself, the cultural center that we wrapped around to reinstate the square, because it had lost its square shape after the design had been sort of slightly bastardized by Saddam at the time.
I'm particularly concerned because now we have drones. I want to have as much bloody cover for those drones as you can get around.
You've got to stop Google
anywhere.
You've got to stop Google first.
No, I got to stop cutting palm trees, start putting palm trees, and see them as the columns.
Yeah. Well, the master plan that we have for the UCT, the whole idea, there's a sort of sprawling element which you can see on the plan, and that's a canopy.
Yeah.
It's an outdoor canopy, and it provides a huge amount of electricity because it's sort of perforated solar panels. So you're creating a pedestrian, an actual pedestrian open space that can be used because it's in the shade with some direct light coming through. And at the same time, it's generating something we calculated like 50 megawatts of electricity, which is a good percentage of the electricity. Yeah. I mean, we're actually, for the master plan, we're proposing to use a hybrid technology of solar panels with thermal energy and using the thermal energy to cool with absorption chillers. I mean, I'm going to get technical, I don't want to, but the idea is that there are things like that, which you're talking about, which have been addressed in our projects. Mm-hmm. You know, we're very much thinking about the reality, not this fictional sort of, you know, super uber modern building. That's second, you know, that doesn't even come into our discussion. You know, the looks of the building.
You raised the issue of sustainability, you're absolutely right. It's very difficult to talk about sustainability in an oil-rich culture. Have you thought about the sustainability of the library as a type? So how it might change in 20 years, 30 years? I mean, obviously it's changed radically in the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of your research, what might happen?
Well, the
speculative future.
Yes, the terraces themselves are completely open plan.
Right.
So the operational program will be developed in the next few years while the building is being constructed. But the idea from day one has been that this space can be reshaped as the library develops. You know, like we said, we don't really know what to call this. We're calling it a library.
Yeah.
But as this space evolves and the functions change, we have to allow that flexibility. And that's what we've, you know, ensured in the design. There is nothing sort of fixed other than the vertical circulation.
There can be no more noble name than a library.
Yeah. Mm.
The library is fine enough. But there's another space that I'd like to have the time to flag up. Yeah, and that's frozen space. Can I take out the image of the lake from above? That's going to be big time. The possibility of using that water and etc. is all there. But when I look. No, the one that you just showed. When I look at the border, that's a dead space. Yeah? It's okay for humans, but it's that liminal space between water and land, and in this case, one that was always changing as if breathing, because it got bigger and smaller, that you have most life happening.
Yes.
In that space between the two. If you cut it, and now in Europe and in America, they are very busy breaking down those embankments, those barriers. They are very busy rewilding, basically by focusing on that border. Put in this design this future relation to nature be brought in and exemplified, rather than following the tradition that is now past of creating these deifications.
No, but actually, maybe you cannot see it there, but it's not a knightly Greek cup, the shape of the lake is actually stepped.
Yeah, but the relationship with the water is something. This is why we didn't want to talk too much about the master plan, because it's at the early stage of the design. But you're right, there is this very important relationship that the people are going to have with that water. What we're doing with the master plan is we're bringing people to this site, which at the moment they don't have access to. And I think it's very important
to bring people.
But actually, if you want to make them understand the importance and the value of the things that you're trying to protect, which are so important for Iraq, then they have to be engaged. They have to physically be there. You have to bring them there. What they did in the Olympic parks,
that's a good example.
Yeah, that's a great example. And you don't have to be educated to make that immediate connection. You're physically there. You're able to see, what they're doing, and it becomes important.
Or a discussion. The London Wetland Centre. At the London Wetland. Not the Olympic, even better. The London Wetland Centre.
Sure. But this is bang in the middle of an urban. Yeah, but this is what we're trying to do. We really understand the importance of the water itself, and we're trying to bring people. And I know that sometimes you don't want to do that, but it's important to, because the people themselves want to engage with that water, and there's a lot of issues there that need to be raised. In the same way that we're making this very literal communication of sustainability with the roof. There's lots of subtle ways that we've designed that into the library, but there needs to be this engagement with the people, and that's something that we're addressing. But it's the early stages of that design.
Sure. Yeah, I have faith that AMBS has the acumen, the knowledge, the love of the country to be able to do and promote the best. Yeah. But this part is one of the best that we've seen very little.
Yeah.
It would be wonderful if MBS can pioneer that.
We will hopefully rise to that challenge.
Mm-hmm.